How many people here today have ever spent money on advertising? Just a quick show of hands. Okay, so what I would expect, pretty much everybody, look around. Everybody has spent money on advertising in this room. How many people here have spent money on advertising and didn't receive a return? In other words, failed advertising, it didn't actually make you any money. Slip your hands up, look around the room, pretty much everybody. Now you should know, okay, put your hands down. You should know that Google and Facebook, being the largest advertising platforms in the world, make most of their money on people just like you. People who spend money on advertising and don't receive a return. People who fail in their advertising efforts. And I'm sure the advertising giants appreciate that about you. But why is this happening? Because, I mean, this is a problem, because what it does is it steals future opportunities away from you. From your business, from your employees, from your vendors, from your family, your children. Because you're supposed to be advertising in order to make money, right? You're supposed to receive the elusive ROI. You're looking for a return on your what? Your investment. But in the advertising industry, what we call what you spend on a monthly basis, we call that your ad spend. Makes sense, right? You spend money on advertising. So it's your ad spend. But I don't think that that's right. I don't think that you should be spending money on advertising. I don't think anybody should consider it an expenditure, but rather an investment. And you should be looking at a return on an investment. Your investments should be solid. Your investments should be thought through before you invest. Your investments should be either virtually risk-free, or at least you should have been able to figure out how to mitigate the risk before you invested your money in it in the first place. Does that make sense? I mean, wouldn't you want to not throw your money away? I mean, what if you could almost guarantee that every investment that you made returned a profit? You probably would make a lot more investments, wouldn't you? And that's what I want to talk to you about today. So I see this as a problem. That people are wasting money. They're throwing money away. This is cash that could be put to better use for you. So what's the problem? And how's it stealing an opportunity? What do I mean by that? I mean that there are methods out there that you could use to grow your business. And that's why you're here. That's why everybody's here. You want to grow your business. You're trying to figure out why. I mean, the process is really simple, but everybody's making it more complicated than it needs to be. Let's break the process down. You're in business. What does that mean? You're offering something to somebody in exchange for money, right? I mean, is that always what business is? Not necessarily, but in this case, we're going to talk about exchanging it for money. We can exchange it for services as well in the case of, say, a barter, but that's not a sustainable business model. So let's assume that we want currency, right? Because that's generally how business works. So we're selling what? Either a product or service. There's really no other way. So if you're in business right now, it's because you are offering a product or service to somebody else in exchange for cash. That's what a business is, right? And if you want to make more money, you need what? You need more sales. What's the number one reason why businesses fail? And I ask this to groups all the time. What's the number one reason why businesses fail? And you know what? If I ask 10 people that, I get 10 different answers. By a show of hands, if I ask you to tell me why business fails, I can do it right now. I'm not going to, though, because I can tell you how it's going to play out. Everybody's going to come up with different ideas, different scenarios, lack of funding, lack of knowledge, lack of experience, right? Not enough time, not enough education, a myriad of different reasons why a business might fail. But I can tell you for certain, there's only one primary reason why any business would fail, and that is because of a lack of sales. Right? So if you want to make more money, right, you want to do the opposite of failing. And even if you're doing really well right now, and I know many of you are, that doesn't mean you're impervious to failure. Just ask Blockbuster Video, ask Sears, ask Toys R Us. They'll tell you. No one is impervious to failure. So you need to account for that. Sales can drop. Industries can change. Buying habits and spending habits can change. Recession can happen. Bubbles can burst. We've seen it in the late 90s in the dot-com era. We've seen it in 08 with the real estate industry. And to be fair, many, many other industries as well. So how do you protect yourself from that? You need more sales, but more than that, you need an ongoing stream of sales. You need to know that there's a consistent predictability to your lead generation and your sales process. So this is where your marketing comes in, right? Because you know that in order to make more sales, you need to talk to more people. True or not? Yes? But how could you talk to more people if no one knows that you exist? That's where your marketing comes into play. Your marketing happens before the sale can occur. It's that which allows your prospect to know that you exist in the first place. So marketing is imperative. It's not an optional thing. Do I need to do it? Do I not need to do it? Now, let me be clear about something. When I say marketing, I don't necessarily mean advertising, although advertising is a form of marketing, and it's probably the one that's most synonymous with the word, probably the one that most of you think of first. Advertising, marketing, they go hand in hand. What's the difference? Well, marketing could be other things too. It doesn't necessarily need to be advertising. Social media is more popular today than it ever has been, and it's growing in popularity. There's one example of how daily posts and connections with other people don't actually cost money in terms of dollars and cents, but it can produce a semi-organic stream of traffic, which could convert to sales if you know what you're doing and you're doing it right. That isn't what we would necessarily consider advertising, but it does come at a cost, and that cost being your time. And of course, on those same platforms that we can grow a brand organically, we can also usually advertise for a fee. So when do you do what? When do you advertise for a fee? When do you grow organically? When do you try SEO? When do you use social media? And when do you do other things? Well, let's talk about that. In order to make more sales, more people need to know that you exist. You got to realize something, that there's a lot of people in the world, and just by sheer magnitude of population, there are plenty of people, regardless of what you're selling right now, who will find value in what you're selling. You know, years ago, we used to validate an idea to make sure there was a market for it first. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think in this day and age, what we do now, or what we should be doing, is validating who the market is more so than validating that there actually is a market for it. Because I've seen people buying the most obscure things. You know, some of our clients that we've been really skeptical about getting involved with have been extremely successful selling some really obscure things. We've invented really obscure things, and people will still buy it. So I don't know if you really even need to test the viability of a concept anymore in this day and age. I think you need to test who your market is, but I think there's pretty much almost, I would say, a market for most everything. I can't say it absolutely everything, but no matter how weird you think your thing is, and whether or not you think anybody would actually buy it, chances are the answer is yes. There's plenty of people out there that will buy it. The question is, how do you market? All right, so we know that marketing is making sure that you exist, but you need to position it in front of the right people. Okay, if you don't do that, then you're not going to be able to sell your thing. You're not going to be able to get more calls, more appointments, sell your product, sell your service. So you need to position your brand and your product in front of the people who are most interested in what it is that you're offering. And ideally, you want to do it at the precise moment that they're ready to take action. But I'm going to get in just a minute, I'm going to tell you why you've wasted money, why you haven't seen a return on your investment. Maybe you've had some successes in your advertising, and you've got a few right now that are producing a consistent stream of leads and sales for your sales team, and that's fantastic. But there's always those ones that fail. I'm going to tell you exactly why that is and what you have to do in order to correct it. Okay? But first, I'm going to tell you a little story about one of my experiences and how I know how important it is to target the right audience first and foremost before you do anything. Years ago, and I mean like 20 years ago. I was working at a job. I was the general manager of a recycling center. And so we had trucks coming in and out of the yard all day long, making deliveries, making pickups. And there was one tractor trailer pulled out the side of the road that didn't look familiar to me. I knew all the brands of the trucks. I knew the trucking companies. I knew their colors. I recognized them when they would come in. They were regulars. They came in like every day, once a week or so. This one was really obscure. And he didn't pull right into our yard. He pulled up outside the yard, alongside the curb. He parked his truck. And inquisitively, I started walking towards him because I thought maybe he was a trucker in the wrong place. And he approaches me, and I said, "Hey, what's going on?" And he says, he asks me if I wanted some green beans. And I said, "What? Do I want some green beans? What are you talking about?" And he says, and he explains to me, he says, "Well, I was doing a delivery and delivering some green beans. I'm hauling some green beans." I forget where he said he came from. This was up in Pennsylvania, by the way. I think he said he came up from South Carolina or something like that. And he says, "I came up, I'm delivering these green beans." And they didn't have enough room for the whole load. So we got 3/4 of the truck unloaded. We got I got a quarter left of crates. And I got to go all the way back down, bring the green beans back to where I picked them up in South Carolina. And then I come all the way up to New York for my next load. So I'm trying to figure out a place where I could drop off these green beans. And I was hoping you might want some. I said, we're a recycling center. We don't recycle green beans here. And he said, no, I understand that. I just meant maybe you want some green beans. And then I started thinking, I like green beans. How many green beans are we talking? He says, "A quarter trailer. But this is like I think it was a 48-foot trailer. So, I mean, it's a quarter of the trailer. It's a lot of green beans. It's crate after crate. I mean, floor to ceiling." I said, "Well, let me come take a look." He pulls up. I don't know why. I just felt like maybe I can get a great deal on green beans. And in my head, I'm thinking maybe I could resell these. So he opens up the doors of the trailer, and I step inside, and I'm like, wow. Like, I know where the trailer ends, but I can't see to the end of the trailer because it's floor to ceiling stacked with these big wooden crates of green beans. And he opens one up and he shows it to me, and they look great, you know. And I have having a culinary background, worked in many restaurants up until that time. This was before I became a chef. For those of you who know my story, and I had an affinity for fresh produce, okay? So I'm looking at these and I'm thinking, I said, "How much you want?" Right? And so he says, "Well, I really just want to, you know, I want to get my next load." You know, he found that it was not a productive use of his time or fuel, because those trucks are pretty expensive to fuel up, to go all the way back down to South Carolina to drop off a quarter load back to where he picked it up. He says, "If I can get rid of it in Pennsylvania, I'm only, you know, 2 hours away from my next load." And that, and he was smart to think that would have been more efficient if he could find somebody that could take your... But what are the chances he's going to find somebody to take his green beans from him? Well, what are the chances he's going to get a guy like me who sees opportunity in produce, right? So what did I do? I said, "Yeah, I'll take him." I negotiate a deal. He brings the truck in. I have one of my forklift operators go to the back and unload the truck. And we got these crates of green beans all over the loading dock. Now I need to figure out how to get them back to my place. Luckily, I only live like a half a mile away. So it's not too bad. I ask a couple of guys that work there who have trucks, but they don't have their truck with them because they rode in with somebody else. Long story short, I've got no way to transport these green beans, even though it's only a half a mile up the road. It's still a lot of crates, and I'm driving a Camaro. All right, so if you've ever seen a Camaro before, back in the, when was that? I don't know, 90s, I guess, early 90s. It's there's no trunk space. Small back seat, right? Very little trunk space. Hatchback. But I did it anyway. I think I was able to squeeze maybe 4 to 6 crates at a time and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth all night long until like 11 o'clock at night. I was done work at like 4 p.m., 5 p.m., something like that. And it took me all night coming back and forth to get all these green beans to home. Now, mind you, at this time, I'm living with my parents. My parents are out of town for the weekend. They have no idea that the entire backyard is full of green beans, crates and crates upon crates of green beans. But my goal was, since I got such a great deal on this load, I was going to go to all of the produce stands over in Jersey to sell my green beans the next morning. Because that's the kind of hustler I was when I was in my 20s, right? So I get up early, like ridiculously early, probably like 4:30, 5 a.m., I got like my 6 crates in the back of the car, and I head over to Jersey. It's probably maybe a half an hour, 40 minutes away from where I was at. And I go to one produce stand, my first produce stand. I ask to talk to the owner. He's there. I say, hey, look, I got some green beans. You need some green beans? He says, I don't need green beans. I said, okay, but I'll give you a great deal. And he said, yeah, but I've got plenty of green beans. And I said, but these are fresh. They look great, and I'm going to give you a great deal. How many can I get you? I got 6 crates in the car, and I'm selling them for like 10 bucks a crate. I mean, and I don't even know how many pounds. You're talking about like 30, 40 pounds of green beans in each crate, and I'm selling the whole crate for like 10 bucks. Because I got such a great deal, I could do this. I knew I was going to make money. And I figured if I sell six crates at a time at 10 bucks a crate, I'm going to make 60 bucks. I come back home another 40 minutes later, right? Load it back up, get another 6 in there, go back over to the bridge, sell another 6. I figure I could do this 5 times in one day if I start early enough in the day. You know, and I'm thinking I'm making 60 bucks a trip. That's like $250 for the day, and I can do it on a Saturday, and I can do it on a Sunday, and by the end of the weekend I make 500 bucks. And then maybe I've got one more trip that I could do on Monday. You know, and so I'm thinking maybe by the end of the week I could probably put $1,000 in my pocket. And for, you know, like a side hustle, because I was making good money at the recycling center, and I was running a couple businesses at the same time. So it's, you know, I didn't need the money, but I always, you know, appreciated an opportunity, and this guy didn't want my green beans. I thought for sure the first place I walked into, I was going to unload green beans. And, you know, and I outside sales is not something that I was any stranger to. When I walked into a place to sell something, I walked out with business. So I went to the next place, and I talked to the guy there, and I said, hey, look, I got some green beans. He says, I don't need any. I got plenty of green beans. And I said, yeah, but I'm going to give you a great deal, and they're really fresh. Check them out. Let me just take a look at them. And I hand him he wouldn't even look at my green beans. He wouldn't even look at them. So I went to the next place, and the next place, and the next place. And it took me all day to realize that I was trying to sell green beans to green bean farmers. Guys that right behind the side of the behind the produce stand that was on the side of the road was a farm. And they owned the farm. They owned the land. They grew the corn and the tomatoes and the green beans. And they grew them for free with the exception of what they paid, you know, to maintain them and to harvest them. They paid in labor and some small soft material costs, but they didn't buy from wholesale distributors. And I didn't think that through before I started selling the green beans, or at least trying to. I had lowered my price to $5 a crate, and I still couldn't sell them. And then I tried to give them away for free because I didn't want to go home with them. And it was at the end of the night, and I started on my way home, and I was a little bit, well, I was down. I was a little depressed. Not only because I didn't make any sales and I didn't make any money, but because I had a whole backyard full of green beans. And my parents are going to be home tomorrow, and they were going to want to know why the backyard was full of green beans. And I wouldn't have any good explanation for it except that I had another failed entrepreneurial idea. Not that most of them failed, because most of them didn't, but when they did fail, yeah, they were, the hustles, and all the excitement faded fast. And so I came back with a full trunk, 6 crates of green beans, the same as I'd left home with the morning before. So what was I to do at that point? Well, I started unloading them from crates, putting them into trash bags, and giving them to all my neighbors. And putting them in my trunk and delivering them to my family. Extended family. Aunts, uncles, cousins, relatives from all over the place. Taking it to friends, neighbors' houses. I remember at one time I showed up at a friend's house I haven't seen in a while with a garbage bag full of green beans. He said, "What is this?" I said, "Green beans. Have a good day." And the look on his face was priceless. He had no idea why I just handed him a hefty bag full of green beans. I explained the story to him later on. But I was in a hurry. I had to get rid of him quick. So I was like Santa Claus that next day, just running all around town giving away green beans. I mean, it's better than coal, but not like the kind of Santa Claus that most people would want to be delivered. You know, I was the produce version. I was like the vegan Santa Claus that year, okay? And that's my story. And there's a moral to this story. And it wasn't just to amuse you or entertain you. And the moral of the story is never to sell green beans to a green bean farmer. In other words, if the person you're selling to doesn't want what you have, it doesn't matter how good what you have actually is. Okay, so you need to identify your target market very clearly, first and foremost. And it doesn't matter if that market's big or small, because you don't need a large target. People are looking for 10,000, 100,000, a million people to deliver their message to, deliver their offer to. Sometimes you only need, you know, 10. 10 produce stands would have cleared me out and made me happy, you know? But I went to many more than that and came back empty-handed. So make sure that whatever it is that you're selling to the right people. You're posting on social media to the wrong people. You understand that, right? Most of the time, that's true. You got restaurants posting on social media, and then the people following your social media page is who? Other restaurants. Other chefs. You know, people going, "Looks great, man. Great job." And they're giving you the thumbs up of approval, but they're not coming in and spending money. You know, I see in the chiropractors, you know, all of our chiropractors' clients, so many times they're like, "Oh, yeah, we post every day on social media. It's not doing anything." And then you go look at the people who like their page. It's a bunch of chiropractors. It's all people in the, you know, I see it all the time. Is you're using the wrong hashtags. You know, you like diet, nutrition, health and fitness, you know, wellness. And it's attracting people who are in that industry. Not the people who are looking for people in that industry. So you gotta have a plan, folks. And that's leading me to my next point. And the next point leads me to the absolute reason why anybody would be spending money on advertising and marketing and then not experiencing the results. Once you know the answer to this, and then you're able to rectify it, then everything starts to change. But let's face the reality here. You can't solve a problem until you know what the problem is. True or not? Who has the audacity to argue that with me? I mean, that's an absolute statement, isn't it? You can't solve a problem until you have first identified what the problem is in the first place. And if you don't solve the problem, you're going to keep repeating your mistake. If nothing changes tomorrow and you keep doing the same thing you've done yesterday, what's going to happen? What are the results of that going to be? You're going to be perpetuating the same dysfunction that you're experiencing in your business today. Even if your business is successful. Because you've got a couple marketing channels that are working for you. I know that. And you're like, "Well, it's not all failing." No, but it's not all succeeding. Right? You should never be throwing money away. You should never be not receiving a return on your investment. So I'm going to tell you what the problem is. Today, you're going to find out exactly what the problem is. And then once you know what the problem is, you're then going to be able to solve it. And after you solve that problem, you're never going to have to worry about You're never going to have to worry about your advertising or your marketing efforts falling flat, not producing the returns that you're looking for. Sound good? Now let's get to the good stuff. But first, let's recap. We want to make more money, so we need more what? More sales. In order to get more sales, we need what? More conversations. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean this. You're not going to close 100% of all your prospects. You know this. You're only ever going to close some percentage of all of your prospects. And this is true regardless of what business, what industry you're in. Doesn't matter if you're selling e-commerce, you're selling products or services over the phone. 100% of all of your prospects are not going to buy from you. The laws of probability will not allow for it. It's physically impossible to maintain a 100% closing ratio. I know this, and you already know this. And to do otherwise is to defy physics. So don't kid yourself. Right? If you talk to 10 people, you can't make 20 sales. Even if you're selling through the internet, right? You're selling something through the internet and you get 10 visitors to your website. Can you sell 20 things? Or should I say, can you sell to 20 people? You can sell 20 things if your average order value determines that. But you can't sell to 20 people if you're only talking to 10. That's the point I'm trying to make. Okay? If you talk to 10 people, are you going to make 10 sales? In a very rare occurrence, you might have a good week, but you can't maintain that average. It's impossible. So we're going to say no. You're not going to close 10 out of 10. Not consistently. So what? 5 out of 10? 50% closing ratio? That'd be pretty awesome. If you can maintain that, most people will not. 40%, 30%, what's your closing average? You should know that. What is it, 10%? 10% in most industries would not be considered good when we're talking about sales. In some industries, it would. If you're selling, I don't know, electric magnetic imaging machines, and you sell 1 out of 10, you're doing good. That's a good week. But in most industries, 10% is not so good. You need to work on increasing your closing percentage. Now, what if you talk to 100 people? Can you close 20 now? Sure. Sure, that's only a 20% closing average. That's feasible. Can you close 10? Yeah, of course. If you can close 20, you can close 10. But I'm saying when you only talk to 10, you could close 10, not consistently. Now, I'm not saying that it's only a numbers game. I'm saying you need to factor both quantity and quality when it comes to sales. I prefer to lean towards quality over quantity first and foremost. Quality first, quantity second, but I think you need to have both. You need to be able to reach the masses, but you need to be smart about who you're targeting also. Because let's face it, if I were to talk to 1,000 green bean farmers, would I have sold more green beans? And the answer is no. So quantity would not have helped me there, considering my earlier story. So you need to be thoughtful about who you're selling to first and foremost. You need to get your targeting straight, right? And then you need to do a lot of that. So let's backtrack. We want to make more money. We need more sales. We need more sales. We need what? More conversations. How do we get more conversations? Effective marketing. Not just marketing, folks. Effective marketing. Otherwise, we're just guessing at things. We need effective marketing that's going to produce a predictive number of people who are actually interested in what we are offering. Okay? Effective marketing. That's what we need. Marketing is what happens before the sale occurs. It's that which allows your prospect to know that you exist in the first place. You have to have that. But there's a step before that. And that's what everyone's missing. That's what you're missing right now. It's the step that comes before marketing. That's what you're missing. If you've ever spent money on some sort of marketing or advertising and it didn't pan out, didn't produce a return, there's only one reason for it. It's because you didn't participate in the step that should be occurring before that happens. It's the step that occurs for the Fortune 500 company, but not for the local small business, because they don't know this stuff. And your local marketing and advertising agency doesn't know it either. And to go to them and say, hey, could you run some ads for me on Facebook? Right? That's a conflict of interest, because of course they're going to say yes. Even if Facebook ads might not be best suited for you, they will likely tell you yes, because that's the business that they're in. And they want to close the deal, just like you want to close deals. And so you go out and you spend money on a new website because you think that's going to help make more sales. And you go out and you spend some money on some SEO, because you think that optimizing your website is going to drive more traffic and make more sales. And maybe it has. Maybe you've received that return. But did you get the maximum amount of return from that? Were there other things that you could have been paying attention to? Other channels, other avenues that would have produced a better return for you in your business? Perhaps there was. Will you ever know the answer to that? Well, I guess you can continue to just keep guessing and trying different things and seeing what works and seeing what does. You win some and you lose some. You know, there's a word for that. It's called gambling, my friends. And that's not a sustainable business model. Stop gambling your money away. If you want to gamble your money away, go to Las Vegas and have a good time. You don't need to be guessing and gambling on your business marketing. There's a smarter way to do that. And I deplore you to stop spending money on advertising and marketing until you have the first step completed. No more ads, no more AdWords, no more SEO, none of that stuff, because you have no business spending a single cent on any of that until you pay attention to the first step. The step that most people don't know about and the ones that the local agency is not going to tell you about. Which you probably want to know by now what it is, right? Well, here it is. It comes down to one simple word. And that is this. Strategy. That's it. That's the big secret. Strategy. Strategy, my friends. That's what you're missing. No one has created a comprehensive model in which for you to follow in order to ensure a high likelihood of success. Imagine, if you will, you wanted to build a house, and so therefore you hire the best builders in the world, the ones that have structures and magazines and have won awards and are world-renowned. And you bring them in to build your house for you because you want the best. And then they ask you, okay, where are the plans? And you say, what? And they go, where are the plans? And you say, what plans? And they say, you know, the blueprint. And we're ready to build your house, but we need the blueprint. We need to know how it all goes together. And then you look at them and say, well, I don't have that. I decided to skip the architect and go straight to the builder because I didn't want to spend the money on the architecture. I didn't want to get the blueprints drafted, so I figured you were the best, so you should know how to build a house. We do know how to build a house, and we can build the best house in the world. But that doesn't change the fact that we need a plan. And if even the best builder builds your house without a blueprint, you know what's going to happen? It probably won't even survive the first storm. The roof might leak. Heavy winds might blow the whole thing down. Walls might not line up. The floor won't be leveled. It'll be a mess. Then you know how much material to use and where to cut it, how to position it. And the blueprint tells them that. The plans tell them that, and that's your strategy. And that has to happen first. And I would strongly urge you to make sure that the person who's doing your ads isn't also creating your strategy. It's a conflict of interest. It is. Because they know what they want to sell you. They want to sell you Facebook ads. It's what you think you want. Why do you want that? Why do you want that unless if you know that there's a very high likelihood of success? You're like, oh, I'm gonna advertise on Instagram. Can you run my social media for me? Why? Why did you decide on Instagram? What led you to believe that because it's effective for somebody else, it's going to be effective for you? And even if it were effective for you, is there something that you might be missing? Your strategist is the one that's going to help you do that. Your architect is the one who's going to help you do that. That's what I do for businesses. They come to me for the architecture. And don't be fooled by people who are calling themselves strategists and aren't really. They're the people who are regurgitating something that somebody else said. And they're following a systematic approach that they use for the same business all the time. And that's a mistake. You can't make the same offer and the same message in the same voice to an audience in New Orleans as you do in Chicago. It's a different culture. They move at a different pace. And there are different things are important to those people. And you have to be aware of who your target market audience is, and you have to speak to them like them in ways that they understand. You have to address their pain points, right? You can't talk about the cold weather and the icy roads and why your product is so important to keep the snow off of your windshield when you're talking to people in New Orleans. That's not going to resonate with them. But you could talk to them about how your product can keep the rain off the windows. They can appreciate that because they get a lot of rain in the summertime. Not so much snow, though. There's different things are important to different people. Right? Here, let me put it this way. Imagine, here's another targeting example, for instance, right? Let's suppose we're selling a weight loss supplement. And we want to sell to somebody who wants to look great. A guy buys a weight loss supplement because he wants to drop 30 pounds before his wedding day, which is 3 months from now. How are you speak to him? What's the message? The message is, imagine what you would look like in your tuxedo on the day of your wedding. If you could fit into your old clothes again. Imagine another guy wants the weight loss supplement for a completely different reason. He was just recently diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and his doctor told him that if you don't get your act together and get on a better diet and drop about 30 pounds, you're going to end up with a heart attack. That product is equally important to both people, but for different reasons. And therefore, our messaging needs to change. Our offer needs to change. The voicing that we structure around that offer needs to change. You can't speak to two different groups of people in the same way. And so when somebody develops your strategy for you in the same way that they did it for the other guy, then you got to understand it's like using the same strategy in the French Revolution to fight a war in Iraq. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. Strategies need to be custom developed by people who lead the trends, not the ones who are following them. Not the ones who are reading the books, but the ones who are writing the books. We develop the strategies in our business at Frisco Strategies that others will follow. And we incorporate that into the sales stream model. So how do you develop a winning strategy? How do you architect your marketing endeavors so that you know that you're maximizing your return? How do you know that it's going to be effective? Well, there's a couple of ways to do that. Number one is to look at data, okay? A competitive analysis to start with. Look at what your competition is doing, okay? Understand that. Understand what they're doing that's successful, but also understanding what they're doing is failing is imperative. I don't mean just copy other people in your industry just because they're doing it, but only use what they're doing as a starting point of the ones who are successful. If they're not successful, don't do it. So you have to pay attention to that. The number two way is through personal experience. Well, or professional experience, I should say, more to the point. So for instance, when somebody comes to me to develop their strategy, they have to know that, you know, I started in marketing, I started in business when I was a teenager. And then in my mid-20s, I became the VP of a marketing consulting firm. And I did that for 2 years. And then I moved on to another company. And I was a VP there for another 2 years. And then I started my own marketing agency. And since that time, I've owned and operated four different agencies, with each with a different level of proficiency. So I know all the major platforms. I know YouTube. We know Instagram. We know Facebook. You know, we know even the ones that people aren't using, Craigslist and Quora, and how to leverage those, how to leverage Fiverr, you know, how to use, you know, YouTube, LinkedIn. We know these platforms. Pinterest, which is definitely undervalued, underrated, and underutilized, but very effective. We know how blogging works. We know Google AdWords. And so it's important that you have a full stack strategist with your best interest in mind. It isn't good, it's just going to try to sell you something, but understands through decades of experience the best method for your particular business model to begin with. And then from there, add to that the data that's been collected, and then add to that a third component. And that third component is your experience. Your experience, because you have stories to tell about the thing that you tried and didn't work. Let's figure out why it didn't work. Obviously, it's because you didn't have the right strategy. But if you did have the right strategy, would it have been effective? And we start analyzing that. We start looking at your email list. You know, who's on it? And what do they all have in common? You can't do that, but we have software, proprietary software that allows us to do that. It analyzes. We could put an email, all your email list, everybody who's on your list, into a database and find out how they average out in terms of income status and where they're located, how many kids they have, and all kinds of things that would be completely irrelevant if we were like posting a billboard on the side of the highway. But when you're dealing with digital marketing and you can target with a high degree of efficiency, it could be very advantageous to know as much about your current customers or people who have expressed interest in your offering as we possibly can. So they're the primary components that we use to begin with. And then from there, we do some testing. But we do the testing before we hand it to the client, you see. So we want to make sure that it's effective. So we put our own money into the testing and making sure we get some positive results back, which is different than how an agency would do it. We want to make sure that the strategy that we put in place is not one method, but multiple channels, right? So you should have a multi-channel campaign, because that works the best. And if you're going to spend the money anyway, you might as well get the maximum return. So pick, you know, 3 to 5 marketing channels that would be the most effective for your business, and then do that. And make sure that those channels are cross-connected with one another. In other words, you might run an ad on Google in where we offer somebody some additional information and they give us their name and their email address. And then we take the name and the email address, we send them the information, and they start getting more acquainted with you and your business. So then they begin to know you a little bit. And then we upload that email address into, say, Facebook, and then we run an advertisement to them. So when they log into Facebook, they see your ad, and they're like, oh, that's the people that I just filled out the form for and got the one sheet PDF from, and or, you know, the webinar to, or whatever the case may be, whatever marketing materials. What marketing materials? Well, that's part of the strategy too. And a lot of times, you know, advertising agencies are one-trick ponies. They don't really know that there's 20 different, you know, ways that you can market a business to somebody. So multiple channels, multiple marketing materials, but all in all, you want efficiency. You want the maximum return for the least amount of time, effort, and energy. Then you can scale from there. Don't let anybody sell something to you that you're not quite ready for yet. They want to sell you some big, elaborate video production, you know, and maybe you're not there yet. Or maybe you are there, and you want to make sure that they're up to par with what you need. You know, you need somebody that can create that's just as efficient with a local business as they are with a Fortune 500 or a large franchise company. You know, and we've done it all. You know, but if you're going to the person who's selling the advertising and asking them to do the strategy for you, consider that as a conflict of interest. It's like getting diagnosed by the surgeon. The surgeon's the one, you know, they're doing the $30,000 procedure. You know, and if they're not, look, a surgeon who's not in surgery is not really a surgeon at all. That's where they want to be. They want to be in the operating room. That's where they do their business. You know, a lawyer who's not practicing law is not really a lawyer at all, is he? He wants to be in the courtroom. You know, he wants you to go to, he wants to take something to trial. The surgeon wants to cut somebody open. That's what they're trained to do. You know, you want to do the things that you do well, right? So you can't blame them for that. You know, and nobody's twisting your arm to, you know, to. So they're going to sell it to you. They're going to try to sell it to you. And they're going to make it seem as if it's the best thing in the world. You know, so when you do get your strategy built out and developed for you, you know, and you do get your business, you do find your business architect, make sure that they specialize in that first and foremost. And they're not trying to just sell you something. And that it's customized, you know, for your particular business. And that you understand full well how and why it was customized. And that that is communicated, conveyed to you. And if you have that in place from the onset, you have those blueprints that you can hand to your builder. Now you can take that strategy to any advertising agency you want and hand them the step-by-step process. You know, and so we develop strategies for advertising agencies and marketing agencies all over the place, and they love that because that's the hardest part. Figuring out, you know, the ad creatives and the ad copy and what channels to market on and how to retarget them. It's a lot of, and meanwhile, they got the client breathing down their neck saying, I haven't gotten any leads yet. I haven't made any sales yet. And it's been 2 weeks. It takes longer than that to develop a strategy, but most of them are not adept at that. That's not what they do best. If they run Facebook ads, that's what they do best. You know, if they do SEO, then that's what they do best. You know, so in, you know, in our company, we're strategists first and foremost, you know, and that, but we also are experts in all the platforms too. And that'll happen after, you know, a couple of decades. If the platform has been around that long, Facebook hasn't, Google has by now. AdWords have been around for a while. But there's been a lot of changes, and that's the other thing. If somebody's not eating, breathing, and sleeping those changes, they're not going to know what they are. Changes in policies, changes in terms of services, changes in algorithms, changes in best practices. The landscape changes quite a bit. And if you don't know what they are, if you blink, you're going to miss it. So don't think you're going to do it all on your own. You know, it's impractical to think that you can. You know, it's impractical to think that the somebody that you're paying part-time to come in, you know, who's a college student, is going to really be the most effective form for you to, a way to, for you to market your business. And in the long run, you'll spend more money on that. You'll spend more money paying somebody $10 an hour over the course of like a year, and then you add up what you've gained from it, than you would just, you know, spending some real money by hiring a company like us, you know, who can do it for you. So when you're looking for a business architect, what are you looking for? How do you know you're going to find somebody that's right for you in your business? Well, you want to look for a couple of things. But first of all, it starts with you. You need to be business savvy. Okay? You need to have enough business acumen that when you get somebody on the phone or, you know, hear somebody talk, that you know that they know what they're talking about. And if you don't, then that speaks more of you than it does of them. I mean, I get on the phone with somebody, I know within 10 minutes whether or not they know what they're talking about. You know, and you should too. You shouldn't, you know, have somebody who's just, you know, giving you fluffy sales talk, pull the wool over your eyes, and close you on something that you don't necessarily need. So you might have to do a little bit of homework. You might have to learn a few things first. It might take some time and it might cost you some money. But get yourself up to speed so that your business acumen is on par with not necessarily the expertise of the person that you're speaking to, the strategist, right, per se. In fact, I would expect that it wouldn't be, and it never should be. It shouldn't have to be. That's not your area of proficiency. That's theirs. But you should know it well enough that you can kind of speak their language, understand what they're saying, right, and know whether or not they have, if there's a conflict of interest, if they're trying to sell you on something else, you know, if they're priced as an introductory offer or somebody who's just learning, are they pricing like a student or are they pricing like a real company? You know, that's important to note too. Somebody says, "Oh, I'll just do it for you for free so I can put you in my portfolio." Well, then you know who you're talking to and you know what type of results you might expect from that. So make sure that they have some experience. Find out how much experience they have. Make sure they have a track record of success. There are a couple of things that I like to look for, and sure, they could be fabricated, but if you have a good sense of discernment, then you should be able to know whether or not there's somebody who's telling it like it is. And then lastly, I mean, or maybe firstly, integrity is important, right? This is not in any particular order. Know that they have your best interest in mind, that they're more concerned about you and your success than they are closing the sale in their bottom line. That's a really hard, difficult combination to come by. And if you find somebody that can put your best interest before their own, who has the knowledge, who has the expertise, who has the experience, who has the track record of success, then there's nothing to think about. Contract with them. Let them develop the blueprint for your success and know that you have a high likelihood of achieving it. There are very few of us out there, let me tell you, very few of us that operate at that level. And those of us who do are usually working with Fortune 500 companies exclusively. Myself included, up until a short time ago. And the cost was prohibitive for most small to mid-size businesses. But now what we do is we take the same methodology and we apply it to smaller businesses. That doesn't mean we're cheap by any stretch of the imagination, but we're not, you don't have to pay Fortune 500 money. So what do I have to sell? I don't have to sell you anything. If you're here now or listen to the recording and you're a smart, business savvy entrepreneur with enough business acumen to know that I know what I'm talking about, then all we have to do is get on the phone and discuss the details, discuss pricing, answer any questions you might have. Give me an opportunity to learn more about your business and how we might be able to help you. I don't have anything to sell. I don't need to sell anything. Our service sells itself. What I'm here today to tell you is that you don't need sales training to become a better salesperson. You don't need marketing. What you need is effective marketing. Okay? Now, you might need those other, you might need to increase your sales skills too. I'm not saying that you don't. I'm saying that, you know, you don't want to put the cart before the horse, as they say. Right? You want effective marketing, and the way you get that is by having an airtight, rock-solid strategy in the first place, because your business will only ever be as strong as the foundation that it's built upon. So build it strong. Build it strategic, because smart business owners have a plan. And if you don't have one, you need one, get one. And if I can help you with do that, then I would love nothing more than to do that. I'm hoping the best in your success. Be well.